Last week, we have explored a question from within the web of life together by way of engaging with a plant relative or a plant ally. And I think it worked quite well. And I was really happy to see all of you bringing your plants. And some people were very surprised and just last moment, found a plant somewhere in the room. And others had heard about it the time before. So I think it was a very sweet experiment to make together. And I've heard from a few people, and some said, they're never going to have the same relationship again with their plant after this. And I think that's exactly, what we want. We want to change and shake up our habitual ways of being in relationship or actually not being in relationship by looking at this in a very different way. And then through that, new openings start to show themselves. They have always been here, but we couldn't see them because of our fixed views and ideas how things are. And that's what the earthworm practice is all about, to metabolize those old ways of seeing and being and open up new ways, expanding our consciousness into a deeper and fuller relationship with our world at a time where so much, new information is starting to come through. And if we are staying in our boxes, we won't be able to relate to it. So, kind of rattling up that box. And it might be a little bit upsetting and stretching, sometimes a bit uncomfortable, but that's exactly what's needed in order to participate more consciously in this transformation, in this transition, from one era to another era, which has happened many times, in history. But, that's for us, it's the first time in this lifetime at least. And it's lovely, to be together as a community, because it's something we all don't have much experience in, no experience really. So we can support each other and, walk into this together. And, as we are training ourselves to sense and consciously experience our deep embeddedness in the web of life, our mind's capacity for being and staying in relationship to what emerges from the field expands and refines. And the mind is naturally vast and expansive, and it's not at all confined to the brain. But the mind, we are in the mind, the mind is throughout the whole body, and we are inside of it. But very often, in our experience, the mind is clouded over by greed, hatred, and delusion. And the habitual stories, we tend to tell ourselves when we are under the influence of this. And in the Pali Canon, that's called the five hindrances. And they are like certain repetitive thought patterns we tell ourselves, and they are based on early coping strategies, early trauma strategies. And then, they form the core of our personality structure, and it's repetitive, it's a repetition compulsion as long as the contraction and the information which is stored in the body isn't really metabolized and digested and freed up. There will be this repetition compulsion. And the five hindrances in the Pali language, they are called nirvarana. And if we are translating that word literally, that means wandering incorrectly, which means, wandering all over the place in a way, which has nothing to do with what is, but is rather some undigested coping strategy from much earlier. So we are bringing the past into the present. And we are actually never fully in the present, but we are in the past. And then the time comes, you know, as we are strengthening our capacity for awareness and mindfulness, that we slowly catch ourselves. And then attending to what is happening and slowly, slowly opening up the space. And if the hindrances are absent, then the mind is naturally expansive, wide open, and settles. And we call that, you know, samadhi, one of the seven factors of awakening. Samadhi, which, you know, we can translate as collectedness of mind, stability of mind. Sometimes it's also translated as concentration. And it's not an additional or not an exotic addition, but rather a simplification and purification of the mind. So the collectedness is not something we add to the mind, but by the hindrances, you know, being temporarily pacified, the mind in its full expansiveness, luminosity, vastness is accessible to us. Just like, you know, when the sky is free from clouds, you can see the sky, which is boundless. And if there is clouds, you know, then we sometimes think there's not even a sky underneath if it's a real thick cloud cover. And, you know, earlier on when I came to America, I lived for a few years in the Sunset District, the Outer Sunset in San Francisco. And in the summer, we sometimes had like 3 months clouds. William might remember that when he lived here too. Like there was no way that you could see the cloud, see the sky for about 3 months. So it was pretty hard actually after a few years to keep going with that. And it's like that. It can be, you know, that we are constantly obsessing and lost in those nirvana, in these incorrect wanderings. But the sky is underneath. And it's a simplification and a purification when we are able, you know, to connect with the sky. And the nirvana, the incorrect wanderings, are actually, you know, a complexification, making it all more kind of, you know, complicated really. And then we are relating in our lives in ways, you know, which are not in accordance with reality. And through that, you know, we are somehow, you know, also creating our lives, you know, in a way which we actually don't want, but because of the repetition compulsion, we start to make it happen. And the practice, you know, is not about trying to get rid of those patterns or going somewhere else, but it's simply about adding something to it, which is then this something is mindfulness and awareness and interest to what is already happening. And through adding that mindfulness and awareness and interest, we start to see more clearly, you know. So if we say yes to what we are experiencing, we can drop deeper into it, and then we start to come to a place which is not so crowded, you know, which is more open, simple, and then we can see more clearly. And, you know, adding mindfulness, adding interest to it is just simply, you know, paying attention to what our experience is rather than aimlessly wandering about, yeah, half-heartedly wandering about, you know, doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and just like frittering our time away. So this dropping deeper allows us to dive into the deeper layers of the mind through simplification and purification. And that's, you know, what meditation is all about. It's not about creating something which isn't here, but it's about not attaching to complexification and diving deeper through interest and awareness. And You know, if we are practicing samatha, which means, you know, collecting the mind, then that leads to the jhanas, immersions, or to, you know, states of great peace for the mind and great clarity. Or if you're practicing vipassana, that's about insight into what's called the three characteristics of life: impermanence, unsatisfactoriness or instability, and not self or emptiness. You know, those three, to see those characteristics in action inside of our own experience leads to letting go. And, you know, if the meditation goes well, then we are increasingly moving from doing to being. And the more perfect the meditation is, the less we are doing. And, you know, in order to encourage the mind to settle and go in that direction of doing less and being more, we give the mind a simple task, you know, a simple object like the breath or the body breathing or a mantra or, you know, some traditions do visualizations, or we can do simple movement like walking, just really, really simple. And then giving the mind this thing, you know, to have something, but not a complex thing, something simple. And then the mind starts to settle down. And in the scriptures, you know, it's compared with a wild elephant, which is chained to a post, you know, and the chain is the mindfulness, and the post is the meditation object, which keeps us in the present moment. In the beginning, you know, the elephant is like going really wild and pulling at the chain and getting angry and all of that. But then in time, after he has been fighting against it, at one point it lies down, you know, next to the post. And then he can be trained. And then that huge power, which is in this big body, can be used, you know, for diving deeper and for insight. So today, you know, I'd like to guide us in a meditation on the seven factors of awakening to just show us, you know, that those seven factors of awakening and are natural qualities of the mind, which are always already present. We just need to, you know, make a conscious effort to notice them. And through noticing them, we can train them. And, you know, any kind of meditation we are doing, we always engage in those seven factors of awakening. And there's also other ways, you know, how the mind can be, you know, the mind, the qualities of the mind can be laid out. But the seven factors is a very ancient scheme, which, you know, features in the four Satipatthana, the four establishments of mindfulness. And just let's start by finding a posture we can sustain for about 40 minutes. And allowing the breath to take you into the body. And you're sensing the hardness of the seat where you are sitting on, a chair, cushion, bench, wherever you're sitting, just sensing that, and the gravity which gently pulls us towards the planet of which we are part of. where we actually cannot discern where there's any real fixed boundary. We are more than just a part of it, we are it. And that's something for the mind very difficult to make sense of by thinking. But we can make sense of it by direct experience. So allowing your awareness, your mindfulness to sense that space, you know, where the body and the surface, where the body is sitting on, where they meet. And as we are staying with that, we become aware that this is not a fixed boundary. It just appears to be like this. And there's lots of things, you know, which appear a certain way to our sense organs. But then, you know, if we're expanding the capacity through dropping deeper, it starts to display very differently. And that's exactly where our work is right now, to grow out of this habitual ways of limiting our sense experience and acknowledging, you know, that we are at a threshold where our capacity for relationship with the biosphere is changing simply because it needs to. Because we have hit, you know, the limits of what the biosphere can support. So naturally, you know, the self-regulating intelligence of this process we call planet Earth comes up with some kind of answer to that. And the answer is that more and more of us sense that we are not separate. And sensing also, you know, that we actually can train our bodies and minds to become more capable for relating to the biosphere, to the field from which we have emerged. And it's like a natural unfolding, as you know, evolution has unfolded over billions of years. There are always new capacities have been set free because it was necessary for the next step. And you know, we can consciously make ourselves available for that work by using those very ancient methods, but continuing to go further and further with them as these openings, you know, become naturally available. So, you know, as we are aware of the place where the body meets the surface, and we can, you know, maybe sense that this is not a concrete, even concrete, you know, isn't really as concrete as we think. A blade of grass can come through concrete if conditions are in place. There's nothing impermeable other than even, you know, ignorance is not impermeable if we apply ourselves because of simply of the fact that everything is arising and ceasing. Not just like a breath Well, the seasons, but whole world systems or narratives, civilizations. And then maybe seeing if you can go a little bit deeper into the body of the planet underneath where you are sitting, and if that doesn't really come about for you, then knowing the absence of it is also a way to be aware. Just noticing the numbness. It's a first step towards being in relationship. So with the out-breath, sending down roots, sending down awareness into the body of the planet, and with the in-breath, breathing up the vastness and the stillness and the stability. And the power which resides there, which powers us. So, paying attention in this way is already the first factor of awakening, sati, or mindfulness awareness. And then, really staying with that, having interest in it allows us to drop deeper. And that's the next factor of awakening in the Pali language called Dhammavicaya. And we can translate it as interest. And sometimes it's also translated investigation of Dharma, Dhammavicaya. Because if there's no interest, it's hard to stay with the object. Then, in order to stay, we need some form of energy. If there's interest, energy is quite naturally emerging. If there's not so much interest, we have to put in more energy. That's the next factor of awakening, virya. As we are staying with the experience in this way, there's a sense of ease comes up. If the mind can really stay with the object, and that's the next factor of awakening in the Pali language called piti, which is translated sometimes as joy, which might be a little bit too much of a word, maybe, contentment might be more fitting here. That the mind is okay with that. It's no longer starting to search, does those incorrect wanderings to entertain itself, to defend itself, to be somebody, to fill itself with something. So mindfulness, sati, interest, tamavichaya, energy, virya, and piti, ease, like a subtle joy, which is, a result of the simplification. And then there naturally, as the mind experiences that, it starts to calm down, which is the next factor of awakening, prasadi or calm. So, as soon as that joy arises, the piti, from then onwards, it's quite effortless as the remaining factors, arise. Because a mind which is like having some kind of joy or contentment naturally calms down, no longer looking for something else. Then the mind calms down, it becomes stable, collected, focused, and that's the next factor of awakening, samadhi. Like, collecting pieces of wood for a campfire, and then we can, make fire, we have light, and we can nourish ourselves. Cook something on the fire, there's a sense of fullness, ease. Being in relationship, no longer wondering about looking for something better than this. And that capacity for staying with experience until we drop deeper, this is what we need to train always in order to, have insight in terms of, spiritual practice and liberating the mind from ignorance. But now it's also about, in order to sustain life, human life on this planet, we really need to urgently take an interest in the parameters of life as they are presenting themselves, and really take an interest rather than trying to get away from them. Controlling them, subduing them, extracting, just constantly pushing against, rather than aligning ourselves. Because that aligning ourselves, that's our opportunity. That is something we really can do. And then there's the seventh factor of awakening, which is upekkha, evenness of mind, sometimes also, translated as equanimity. And it's a sense of acceptance and sometimes compared, with the love of a grandmother who has seen so many different things, and who is no longer trying to control, but who knows that people have to learn from their own experience. And just being there for those, to come back again and again and slowly, giving up resistance and showing more and more willingness to align, to accept, to say yes. And to drop deeper into that relationship with life and with the biosphere. So just a mind, is settled in this way with the seven factors being present. There is a sense of ease and spaciousness, temporary liberation of the mind from clinging, to have it a different way. And my first teacher, Ajahn Buddhadasa, called that a little nibbana, giving us a taste of the summum bonum of the practice. Having the view for a moment, when all the clouds have parted, settled, they're not there, and then we have that vast view. Boundless, expansive, unlimited. And sensing, into the fullness of that openness. Maybe you can, sense the vibrancy, the cosmic hum, the aliveness of that fullness, of that empty vastness, which gives birth, to every thing we can see, touch, feel, hear, smell, taste. And all forms are different representations of that, different frequency of vibration, of energy. Our bodies, our minds, biosphere at large, the whole cosmos. And, with that aliveness, there is information which is coming through. Which then, takes form. Information. And that form lasts for some time and then it dissolves back. And as we are, taking an interest in what we are experiencing, we start to drop deeper by saying yes. And then it starts to open up. And that somehow, what brings us here, this somehow subtle understanding of there's some significant changes happening. We're in an era of transformation. Like many have been before, and but for us it's something new. And what is pulling us? What is it? And for now we can call it the urge to evolve. Which is not a personal urge, but it's something which we all somehow sense as this aliveness, becomes conscious. And we are, starting to understand that the body is actually an organ of listening, not just, like a structure to carry around the brain. That's much more than this. The whole body is experiencing and participating. It's a plug-in in to this much vaster intelligence. That's just an update, which is, basically coming to us naturally. And if we are consciously opening our minds, we allow that to emerge, and we make some space by training that welcoming and that yes. Because this is how evolution has been operating since billions of years, starting with super simple life forms, and now we are 4.5 billion years later. Here we are still continuing with that. All of the ancestors behind us, and future generations in front of us, and we're just doing our little bit by making some space for welcoming what wants to be embodied. Simply by, you know, sensing and feeling into the body, that's what we need to train now at this point in history. Coming down from the thinking mind. There's been enough of that. There needs to come a balance. Just sensing that willingness in your own body as this urge to evolve. This is enough, you know, for getting started with this. Crack, you know, through which the light comes in. And, you know, shining a light on the situation which changes that situation forever. Because we are suddenly realizing there is much more happening outside the box. Like a, you know, like a set of nested Russian dolls. There's always like something outside, a new way of. A new context. And that's going on and on and on since billions of years. And it starts by what's happening right now by really saying yes to that and dropping in and I'm dealing with the tediousness also of the saying yes. And you know, the fear, the doubt, the boredom, the all of it. It's all part of it. And that's why community is so important. For our own health and for planetary health. And really honoring, you know, that form of knowing in yourself, because I think that's what brought you here to this group. Really honoring that. That there's something calling you. That you already know something about this urge to evolve. That's the spiritual resource for you, for all of us. So all of our ancestors, which actually provide the soil we are sitting on. All of the future beings which are not yet embodied. And seeing in our place in this long, long lineage of living. And then the lineage of the transmission of the Dharma inside of that. And we can add something small to that inheritance to live it in a better way than when we got it at our birth. So that future generations may find a bit more space to relate to this unfolding. So we're really using our intuition to sense into this. Intuition is a relational sensing and feeling and thinking. It's a different way. It's not just about me. So it's the ability to understand something immediately without the need to consciously reason. Then, for the remainder of the meditation, just, becoming aware of that which knows. Knows about the spaciousness of the mind. Like, the capacity of a mirror to reflect. Mirror becoming conscious of that capacity. By being it. Just being what it is. There's no subject, no object, but just being the knowing. And maybe, you can open your eyes from just looking down, on whatever is in front of you. Just opening the eyes and taking in the seeing, knowing that you are seeing without getting distracted by that. So keeping the awareness of the body as it is and including seeing. And effortless, as we are opening our eyes, we see and we know that we are seeing. So that's that reflection capacity of the mirror. We know that we are seeing. We know that we are sensing gravity. That's the refuge in Buddha, this knowing. Then we can, close the eyes again. And then, for the last part of the meditation, I'd like to share with you a beautiful quote, which is called the Four Dharmas of Kampopa. Kampopa is one of the masters in the Vajrayana lineage, and it goes like this: I'm ringing the bell, and while the bell is ringing, you can contemplate that those four slogans. First one is, grant your blessings so that my mind may be one with the Dharma. Grant your blessings so that Dharma may progress along the path. Grant your blessing so that the path may clarify confusion. Grant your blessings so that confusion may dawn as wisdom.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.